Oh yay, oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas, this Honorable Court.
Thank you. Be seated, please. The court is very honored to have been invited by the University of Texas School of Law, which is my alma mater, and also Deborah Lehrman's. She is not able to be with us today. Justice Lehrman has another engagement, but she will be participating in all of these cases. The court would like to thank Dean Lindquist and all of the associate deans and the faculty who have made our stay this morning so far very nice, and we look forward to speaking to students later on during the day. And we have two arguments that are scheduled today, and they are, we think, both very interesting, and there are capable lawyers on both sides. So for the students that are interested in oral advocacy, I think you're in for a treat. And I would invite you not only to watch the arguments as you are and as they are being streamed live, but take time to read the briefs so that you can really get a feel for these complex legal issues that are confronting the court in these two cases. Again, thank you, Dean, and this is a special occasion. We've been here a couple of times before. It used to be that the court could only sit in Austin, and before that we didn't travel to University of Texas or outside of Austin, but there was a constitutional amendment that permits us to once or twice a term hear arguments elsewhere, and this is in that line of thought. So we're ready to hear the first of the two arguments. We've allotted 20 minutes per side in each of these arguments. As I've told you, these arguments are being broadcast over the internet, and they will be archived so you can watch them or any other case since March of 2007 at your leisure. The first argument is Rio Grande Regional Hospital versus Villarreal and others, and the court is ready to hear argument in that case.
May it please the court. Mr. Hatchell will present argument for petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. This is a wrongful death action in which the hospital is accused of causing the death of Mr. Villarreal by his suicide early in the morning on the day he was to be released from the hospital following his voluntary admission there to for chronic headaches, insomnia, and anxiety. The case was tried to a jury on one general verdict negligence question, and a judgment ultimately rendered for what is now about $800,000. The issues on appeal this morning will focus upon duty and two aspects of proximate cause, the substantial factor element and the foreseeability element.
Let's talk about this, the duty. What duty do these nurses have? Are they to just read charts and follow directions, or is their duty a little more than that?
No, clearly the duties of a nurse, which are defined in the Nurse Practices Act, are to do what nurses do, and that is to basically follow doctor's orders and implement the patient needs and attend to patient needs.
And also diagnose.
Not to diagnose.
What does nursing diagnosis mean?
It's a good question. I have no idea what nursing diagnosis means, to be quite honest. It's never been defined in the statutes. But the one thing that's quite clear in the cases is they do not have the ability to make a medical diagnosis, nor do they have the duty to, nor do they have the right.
Well, they have the duty to monitor a patient after certain medications are administered, the Xanax and the other medications here that are generally prescribed for depression. What does that mean, monitor, in the context of this patient?
In the context of these patients, it would mean to observe the effects of the medication and to report the effects of those medications to the doctors if necessary, and at least to record that in the notes.
So when you hand a patient a razor and he is in the shower for a couple of hours, there is no other action that this nurse should have taken in connection with this duty to monitor?
Well, if there is such a duty in this case, certainly the suicide was not foreseeable, but to answer your question directly, Your Honor, there may well be a duty. If, for example, the medication in somehow or another affected the patient in a way that made him unstable, there may well be a duty to monitor. In this particular case, there's no evidence of that. As a matter of fact, the nurse who assisted him to the shower immediately before suicide was committed spent a considerable amount of time.
There's also spent there was a considerable amount of time that the patient wasn't attending to.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But
how does that weigh in the balance? That seems to be
It weighs in the balance in this respect. Did the failure to observe him for 3 hours cause him to commit suicide? No. It clearly did not. So what is the legal effect of doing that? Well, the legal effect of that could be, as I understand their theory, you might have discovered him in time to have saved his life. I'm not sure that's even a cause of action that's involved here. But the other aspect is how this plays into the causation elements is in two respects. First of all, he was not assigned a 24-hour attendant in this case, and no one who checks into a general hospital on the telemetry floor expects a 24-hour attendant.
But it seems like the nurse should have done something more than disregard her patient for 3 hours.
Well, and then that may well be, Your Honor, but we have briefed this case on the assumption that the failure to check may have been a technical breach of the standards. And what we're asking the court to do is to look and see how that played out in terms of both foreseeability and cause in fact. Could we foresee that leaving him in the shower unchecked and unattended for the period of time he was there would cause him to commit suicide?
The medication that he was given isn't one of the warnings for that medication or the combination that the suicide or suicidal...
Well, there is. Lexapro, as I recall, would be one. However, there is no evidence that taking 3 doses of Lexapro over a 3-day period causes suicide. And there's certainly no evidence in this case that it was evident to any of the nurses attending Mr. Villarreal that he was expressing any suicidal thoughts.
There are many patients in hospitals that may be on Lexapro or other types of antidepressants. If how narrow would this holding have to be? Would we really have to focus on the specific circumstances surrounding each patient? Otherwise, it could be very broad. Anyone who's on Lexapro is a candidate for suicide, if you will.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, each one of them would have to have an attendant and be put on suicide watch. And my belief, personally, is that if you start putting every Lexapro patient on suicide watch, you may, in fact, cause more harm.
But doesn't it sort of raise like a higher degree of care? I say that advisedly. I don't mean some higher standard here, but it's a red flag maybe for a trained nurse looking at this. Well, this person has been prescribed a medication that has treatment for depression, that sort of thing, and they're supplying then razors.
Well, let me correct one thing. He was not, so far as this record shows, prescribed Lexapro for depression. If you read the death summary in this case, right. The doctor is very clear he prescribed it for sleep. But be that as it may, I agree that nurses do owe a duty anytime a patient is on powerful medication to monitor the effects of that medication.
Was it on his charts that a psychiatric evaluation was also requested by the doctors?
No, it was suggested by Dr. Yee, who was a substitute physician for one of the neurologists, who examined Mr. Villarreal and found absolutely no psychosis, no depression.
If that was on the chart, should that be noticed to the nurses?
And noted on there, you might want to consider a psychiatric consultation. I leave it to your discretion. And neither of the two, Dr. Tavares or Dr. Morales, who were the attending physicians in this case, ordered the psychiatric evaluation, bearing in mind that two of those doctors had a history with this particular patient and knew him well and saw absolutely nothing.
Were the nurses aware, or should they have been aware, that he had written a suicide note?
Well, they shouldn't be aware because it wasn't revealed to them. And so I don't see how in the world it could have been. Are you talking about the note that was written early on Saturday morning, or the note that was found after he was found in the facility?
In the morning, Saturday morning.
Oh, Saturday morning was never revealed to us. It was kept by Mrs. Villarreal, and we cast no aspersions on her for doing that. She said she only read a few sentences of that. And as a matter of fact, on the stand, Dr. Tavares testified, my goodness, had I seen that note and the indications of the patient's questioning his own mental stability, I would have put him in a different facility. I would have put him in a psychiatric ward. Mm-hmm. So there's very little we could do. In fact, that's one of the problems in this case, is that the psychiatrist testified that Mr. Villarreal was unfortunately very skillful at hiding his anxieties.
In that vein, that is what the hospital via its nurses should be on notice of. Are the nurses on notice of everything that's in the chart for the patient?
They should be, yes.
Okay.
And Justice Medina, I wanted to get back to your question about duty in this case. Duty enters the case in our view only at one aspect, and that is the Court of Appeals holding, which comes somewhat like a bolt out of the blue because no one argued it, that the nurses in this case were at fault because they, one, did not diagnose his psychiatric illness when four doctors and a triage nurse had failed to do so, and did not treat that, although we have no idea what that treatment meant. But that is absolutely prohibited by the medical, the nursing practices. That's why I was speaking of duty.
Well, I appreciate that. Let's say you're correct on that, but it seems to me that a nurse has more than a duty than to read a chart, check the temperature of a patient, administer medications, and then leave for 3 hours. So there in itself seems to be problematic. But having said that, I guess you would go to the next issue of causation and talk about the Court of Appeals opinion.
I think we can talk about these elements best if we look at the five grounds that the Court of Appeals said that we were negligent in either doing or not doing. And the first of those, as I said, is the failure to diagnose and treat the illness, which we think there is no duty to do by reason of the statute. Numbers two and three were the duty to monitor the effect of medication and consider the symptoms that might cause instability or dizziness. Well, number one, there is no evidence that we did not do this. The nurses were fully observant of Mr. Villarreal, particularly when he was allowed to go, because they had to take the leads off when he was allowed to go to the restroom. And they noted in the charts that he was alert, calm, and behaving normally. But secondly, there is no evidence that any medication caused him to commit suicide. So there was nothing for them to observe. There was no suicidal behavior on his part. that would cause the nurse in her duty to observe, to report back to either the chain of command or a physician.
Mr. Hatchell, in that vein, should the nurses have reasoned that simply by being prescribed Lexapro, which is an anti-depression, anti-anxiety medication, and Xanax for anti-anxiety, it's an anti-anxiety medication, should that have put them on notice of potential suicidal tendencies or instability of Mr. Villarreal?
There's no evidence in the record that is true, and the observations are all to the contrary.
There's no evidence in the record that what's not true, that those drugs aren't used for anti-depression?
No, there's no evidence in the record that those drugs had that effect on this particular patient. In fact, if you look at the death summary, Dr. Tavares notes that the drugs that he prescribed really didn't have much effect on curing his...
Can it be used for something else? I think maybe the question was, is that a general notice to the nurses that perhaps there's something wrong with this patient?
Well, they knew there was something wrong with the patient. That's quite clear, and I think what the duty of the nurses is to observe the effects of the drug on the patient and report either to the chain of command, if necessary, or report to the doctor, or if there's an immediate problem, to take care of the problem.
Given that you conceded that they needed to observe him, and given the medications that is on, isn't it... then foreseeable that he might have taken the type of self-harm, that the action that he took, the self-harm, that the suicide?
I don't think that there is, because again, throughout his entire hospitalization, he is getting better. He's appearing normal to his family. He's appearing normal to his doctors. He's conducting business from his bedside. He's talking to his children on the phone, expressing, you know, hope and things that are going to happen afterwards, and the nurses see nothing during his entire hospitalization.
But that's the point. He's there for 4 days. The doctors don't find any,
physical or organic cause.
Organic causes. Correct. That leaves one other cause. There's some sort of issue. Mental issue.
Well,
because he was there 4 days.
It appears to. In the peculiar way that this affected him, it appears the fact that on the last day that he was there, that he was diagnosed as being essentially having no organic or physical problems, seems to have triggered some sort of delusional thinking process that he was insane and he did not wish to bear the shame of that insanity.
Mr. Hatchell,
absolutely no notice to our nursing staff that was in the offing, and absolutely no ability to foresee that allowing him to shave, which he had done for an hour and a half previously.
Well, that caused some alarm, too. Why would anyone take an hour and a half in the shower?
Well,
in a hospital setting.
That's.
I mean, in terms of foreseeability.
Well, there's very little else to do in a hospital.
Should they have known that there was a problem? Should they have known, based on what happened the day before, based on the fact that she even, I think, admitted that was a, relatively speaking, long shower.
Well, the hour and a half shower was without incident, which set up the stage for his next request, which seemed perfectly normal, So you're back to the question of should they have checked on him sooner? And the answer again is that may well have been a violation of the standard, but what did it cause? Could we foresee, by not checking on him at a particular time, that would cause him to commit suicide? Or did it prevent us from finding him in time to have saved him? And on this record, that is way too speculative to be the basis of liability. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
May it please the court, Ms. Wingate will present argument for the respondents.
May it please the court, by latching on to imprecise language in the Court of Appeals opinion and by ignoring key parts of the record, the petitioners have morphed this case into something that it never was and is emphatically not. I plan to spend a lot of my time here today talking about what's actually in the record here, because all of their arguments are based on assumptions that are not based in the evidence that was actually before this jury. I have 4 points that I need to make. The first, with respect to duty, this case never was about a nurse's failure to diagnose a condition that the doctors never recognized.
Well, the Court of Appeals used the language, a system-wide failure on the part of appellants in diagnosing, assessing, and treating Hermes's psychiatric illness. Now, those appellants include the nurses. That's pretty broad language.
I also agree with Mr. Hatchell that this was kind of a shot out of the dark. We never argued it that way. We never argued it at trial that way. In fact, we stood up during our cross-examination of their expert witness and said, look, we are not saying that these nurses did not diagnose him with a condition that the doctors didn't recognize. And the defense counsel stood up during closing argument and said the same thing. That's not what this case is about.
Appeals opinion seems to rest on this notion that nurses have a duty to diagnose and treat, and then from there they move on to their failures.
Well, I agree, and if this court feels like it needs to make the statement that nurses don't have a duty to make a medical diagnosis to determine the cause of symptoms, I agree with that, and I think you can say that, but I don't think it changes the outcome of this case one bit, because the fact is that the record shows that there was a diagnosis of depression in the patient's files, and that has been completely ignored by the petitioners.
Go into more detail on that. Where was it, and who made the diagnosis?
Dr. Yee.
Dr. Yee.
What I was going to say is there are two main assumptions that the petitioners make, and the first is that that there was no diagnosis of depression in the record. Second is that a diagnosis of depression is the only way that you could foresee a risk of suicide. So with respect to the first point, Dr. Yee was called in to give a neurological consult, and he did, and it's clear as day in his records that his impression was the symptoms were arising from anxiety and or depression. And he recommended a full psychiatric evaluation, but Nurse Bergado's testimony, who is what we are focused on today, is what her understanding was that she read all of the records, she knew about Dr. Yee's consult, and she knew that she had a potential psychiatric patient whose condition had not been ruled out by any other doctor.
Let me be clear about that. When you say Dr. Yee's records, do you mean the medical chart for this patient?
Yes, the medical
chart.
Same
thing? And Nurse Bergado read that chart that she read that chart?
Yes, she did. She also testified.
Anxiety and or depression as the diagnosis?
Depression. And what's interesting about the petitioner's brief is that when they talk about Dr. Yee, they just say anxiety. They don't say depression anywhere, but it's in the chart.
Focusing on the foreseeability aspect, are you arguing that any time there is an indication of depression or anxiety, the hospital should foresee that that patient might be suicidal?
No, and that brings me to the other key piece of evidence that's been ignored by the petitioners in this case, and it came right out of the horse's mouth, right out of their own expert. They put on a suicide expert, Dr. Fawcett. Dr. Fawcett gets up and he says, I am a suicide expert. All I do is study suicide. And he says, it's difficult to predict suicide, but we've been doing studies because there are some factors that would allow you to foresee a suicide. And in fact, he testifies about two studies that he himself conducted, one that was published in 1991, one that was published in 2003. And here's what he said. These patients had extremely severe anxiety that went untreated, and the majority of them, 78% of them, denied that they were suicidal the day or the week before they committed suicide. But they had this severe anxiety. And then he goes on and he explains what he means by severe anxiety. And he says, look, it's not the kind of anxiety that I feel sitting up here on the witness stand and giving my testimony before this jury, or maybe the anxiety that I'm feeling right now giving this argument. He says, it's the kind of anxiety that interrupts your daily life. He says, if I was so anxious that I couldn't think or I couldn't even answer the question, I'd get up and pace around in court and I couldn't sit still, then you would wonder what was wrong with me. The type that you can't think straight, you can't function, that's the kind of anxiety. Now, you compare that to the admitting diagnosis by Dr. Tavares, and here's what he says. This patient has been under tremendous mental stress in his office. He has had cases that he's been working on where several times he has had almost up to 3 or so days almost working continuously. He is concerned because sometimes it is hard for him when they are having group sessions for cases that he cannot comprehend.
But the medical records from this hospital stay reflect that he was oriented, that he was calm. His wife came in. His mother came in. They felt comfortable enough to leave and to leave him there overnight. So these medical records don't bear out. Tell me if they do. That in that hospital, he was not calm and oriented. I mean, that's what the notes reflect.
Well, I think Dr. Fawcett's testimony speaks to that, because 78% of suicidal patients will not tell you that they're suicidal, and they won't give any indication that they are, except for anxiety.
Well, let's not focus on what he said, but on the objective observations of the people that were in charge.